A morning. Today's daf Mamitzias Lamed Ches. Thank you, Lupin Foundation, for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is known as Zechon Smith Lee, but Gabriela Bashmul. Today's daf in Mamitzias, we're going to begin today, I should say, on the very bottom of Lamed Zayin Amid Aleph. We are starting at the last two lines of Lamed Zayin Amid Aleph with the words Amar Mai. As a quick recap, yesterday we started the Mishnah towards the top of Lamed Zayin Amid Aleph, and the Mishnah talks about a person who was coming forward and said, "Look, I stole, and I want to make amends, and I want to do tshuva, and I want to return. I have one small problem, and that is I'm not sure who I stole from. For sure stole, and I know exactly how much I stole. I just forgot who the victim was." And he narrowed it down to two people, and he says to the two people, "Look, I stole from one of you, but I do not know which one I stole from." The Mishnah does not give us their reaction and their response, but be that as it may, so the Mishnah says, under those circumstances, what do you do? So the Mishnah says, So the Mishnah says, okay, so what he's going to do is he's going to give each one of them a money. He'll give each one of them $100. He only stole $100. He's going to end up giving $200, but that, the Mishnah says, is what he's going to do. On the other side, we have a Mishnah in Yevamos. The Mishnah in Yevamos describes a similar scenario, and that was Gazal Echa Mechamisha Ve'in Yodeh Eze Mehem Gazal. So he stole from one of five people. So the Mishnah over there has five candidates of who the victim was, Zeomer Osi Gazal, Zeomer Osi Gazal, and each one of them claims that they were the victim. So now, in a turn of events, the thief now becomes himself a little bit of a victim, as five different people are claiming that they are the victim of the one stolen object. The Mishnah over there says, "Minich zela b'neima misativ Rabbi Tarfon." Now it's a debate over there in the Mishnah, but Shitas Rabbi Tarfon is that you just simply leave this, you leave the item in front of the five, and it says, "Gentlemen, you guys work it out." And that's Rabbi Tarfon's position. So, an obvious discrepancy between our Mishnah and the Mishnah in Yevamos. Our Mishnah says you pay every one of the victims, the victims who say they are the victims. And the Mishnah in Yevamos says, at least according to Rabbi Tarfon, no, you don't. You just put it in front of them, huh?
There's no kness?
No, not according to Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon says you put it in front of them and then you just leave. That is Shitas Rabbi Tarfon. So, obviously that's called the Stira HaMishnayos. That's a contradiction between the two Mishnayos. And how do you resolve that? The Gemara, the very end of yesterday's Daf, said that the way to resolve the two Mishnayos is as follows. There's a difference in terms of who initiated the discussion. If the victims themselves were the initiators, and they are now making claims against the thief, in other words, the thief has been identified, and he stole, and he knows that he stole, but he only stole one item, and five people now are coming to claim it, so then he was not the one who initiated it. It was the victims. There's only one victim, but the five different people went ahead now and claimed that it belonged to them. So then, that's the Mishnah Yevamos. You just leave the item there and be done with it. Masha'inke, in our Mishnah over here, the thief himself is initiating, meaning he wants to do tshuva. So now he wants to do tshuva. So how do you properly do tshuva? He is identifying one of two possible victims. He doesn't know which one he stole from. So if you want to properly do tshuva, so you got to pay both of the two, both victims, even though only one of them is really the victim. Adkan, that is the Gemara's resolution of the two Mishnayos, the Mishnah over here versus the Mishnah in Yevamos. Amar Mar. Now we continue from where we left off yesterday. Last two lines of Lamed Zayin Amid Aleph. Amar Mar Hasam Dekatavayle V'Halam Matoin. Now the Gemara wants to know what exactly is the response of the Gazlan, meaning we're going to the Mishnah Yevamos, and the Mishnah Yevamos, five people are making a claim against him. Now the Mishnah Yevamos doesn't say what he said. What was his response? So Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Halasho Seik. So the Gemara is going to bring a difference of opinions amongst the Amoraim. The Gemara quotes in the name of Rav Yehuda, in the name of Rav, that the Gazlan was quiet. He didn't say anything. Shtika. And Rav Masna Amar Rav Halat Savach. And according to Rav Masna Amar Rav, the Gazlan was screaming and protesting. How can this be? I only stole from one person. How can all five of them claim that they owe me? And the Gemara goes on to explain. You see, the second opinion says that the Ganav has to be screaming. And the reason why is because if he's quiet and every one of the five is making a claim against him and he doesn't have any response, It's because he's admitting that really all five of them are actually victims. We have a principle throughout Shas of Shtika Kahoda that once you're silent, your silence is viewed as acquiescence. And that's why, according to the second opinion, you need him to respond, this is ridiculous, this is crazy, I can't believe it, because if you were quiet, that would be considered acquiescence. Now, what about the first opinion that says that the Goslin does not have to respond? And he can be quiet. And we're not going to view his silence as acquiescence. So the Gemara goes on to explain. Shtika dahakalav kodahu. Matzi amarle hai de shtiki lecho chad v'chad da amina dilma haihu. And as far as the first opinion, you don't need him to scream. Because look, what else are we expecting him to say? Each one of the possible victims is coming over to him and saying, hey, you stole from me. He doesn't know any better. Meaning all he knows is that he stole from somebody. He just doesn't know who he stole from. So over here, he's quiet because it could be true, meaning he could be right. What is he protesting? No, you're not the guy? It's not true. He doesn't know that he's not the guy. He doesn't know that he is the guy. So his silence is not a question of acquiescence. It's just a reflection of his confusion. I don't know. And so therefore, that's why he's quiet. Amar. Gemara now asks another question on the Mishnah Yevamos, and that is the following. He leaves the Geneva in front of them, and they're all going to go ahead and take it. Now the Gemara says, now obviously if they're all going to go take it, obviously each one of them is only going to get a portion of it, a fraction of it, assuming they agree to some sort of distribution, some sort of division. But the Gemara's question now is a very simple one. Let's say you have an item that you find, and you don't know whether it was purposely placed over there, or maybe it was left there by accident. Right, we already discussed this back in the second parak of the Masechta, the place in which it's left and the scenario in which it's left sometimes can be indicative of the fact that it's not a lost item, the person left it there on purpose. However, what if it's a question of ambiguity? You don't know whether the owner left it there by accident or on purpose. So what are you supposed to do? And the answer is lechatchila lo yitol. We learned earlier in the Masechta, don't take it, meaning leave it. However, but if you do take it, so then don't give it to its owner because you don't know if this is in fact the owner. So, Amrav Safra. So, I'm sorry. Let me now articulate the Gemara's question over here. So basically, you have a thief now. He stole. Five people are making a claim against him. He doesn't know who the owner is. So for him to leave it for them to divide it, that is simply inappropriate. You can't take something that you don't know if you're giving it back to the rightful owner and give it back to that person. The Mishnah back in the second parak already taught us this halacha, that if you have something and you don't know who the owner is, you shouldn't give it back to that person. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Safra v'yaniach. So Rav Safra says, so we have to re-understand the Mishnah Yevamos. Mishnah Yevamos says the words v'yistalek, which literally means drop the item and run. But the Gemara now is saying, no, that's not actually what the Mishnah's intent was. The Mishnah's intent was, v'yistalek, remove yourself from the argument, but take the item with you. Meaning, don't leave the item for them. You don't know if you're giving it back to the rightful owner. So the Mishnah over there, that's what the Mishnah means, v'yaniach. It means you're not going to give up the item to them. You're just simply, right, and you're not keeping it for yourself. You leave the item in a state of I don't know, right? Basically, achiyavo aliyahu. Amalei abai l'rava mi'amar rabbi kiva lo zeh haderech motziyoso miyedei avera chishayim gzele chol chad v'chad. Okay, now, going back to the Mishnah Yevamos, the Gemara here quotes the Mishnah Yevamos, so the Gemara now is going to spend a little bit of extra time with this Mishnah Yevamos. We move on to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. In the scenario where five victims, only one of them is a victim, the other four are charlatans. But when the five go over to the thief and say, hey, you stole from me, so Rabbi Tarfon says, okay, you give it to nobody, right, as we just concluded. Rabbi Akiva says, no. You wanna do good. You're gonna pay each one of the five the item that you stole. Now, obviously, you can only give the item back to one of the five, but you'll give the value back to the other four. Now, the Gemara says, so according to Rabbi Kiva, what just happened over here? The Gemara says that according to Rabbi Kiva, do you see what just happened over here? Right now, the thief is a mukhzak. He is the holder of the item. Now, I don't want to call him the owner of the item because he's a thief. He doesn't own the item, but he's mukhzak. He's holding the item. And now, out of doubt, because again, there are five people who are claiming that they are the actual victims, so out of doubt, he's going to be giving it to all five recipients. And the Gemara's question over here is, well, wait, I don't understand. Out of Suffolk, you're going to take something out of the hands of the Muchzak and hand it over to somebody else or a Minu? The Gemara says, I'll ask a really simple question based on a Mishnah. Now, this Mishnah, Baba Basra, deals with the following. Unfortunate circumstances where the house caved in on two people, and we don't know which of the both people died, and we don't know which one died first. Now, the family members, aside from the tragedy and the emotion, the family members also have a question of Yerusha. In other words, which of the two died first? And there are two separate parties vying for the Yerusha. Each one obviously is going to construct a scenario in which that would be beneficial to them. So, Nafal Abayis Alav Alimo. So let's say the house falls on him and on his mother. So Yerusha HaBen Omrim. So those who stand to inherit the son, meaning the mother's child. So Omrim Ha'im Eis Rishona V'Yerusha Ha'im. I'm sorry, Ha'im Eis Rishona. So their construction of the events is that first mom died, so that all of her property now goes to the son, and then the son died, so that they now stand to inherit the entire estate. V'Yerusha Ha'im Omrim, and the inheritors of the mother, meaning obviously it's a different group, it's a different different family members. And when we get to Baba Basra, we're going to be discussing a lot of scenarios in which how you can have inheritors of the mother being a different party than the inheritors of the son. But for our purposes, all we need to know is that there could be a different another party. Right. So V'Yerusha Ha'im Omrim Ha'ben Meis Rishon, and now the inheritors of the mother are going to be constructing a different story in which they're going to say, no, the first the son died, so all of his Yerusha went up to the mother, and then the mother died, so therefore we stand to inherit the entire estate. So so they both agree that what should be done is that the estate should be divided equitably amongst both claimants. Neither claimant actually knows what happened in the house. Nobody knows what really happened. The stories that they're constructing, obviously, is only the story that would best suit and benefit them. But they don't really know what happened, so therefore, yachloku. The estate is going to be divided. V'amar Rabbi Akiva. Now, the only reason why we're quoting this mission, Baba Basra, is to get to this very point. On this mission, Rabbi Akiva says, Modani bezu shehanechasim becheskasam. You leave all the property in its state of chazaka, status quo. Now, it happens to be, I'm not going to get involved. The Gemara in Baba Basra discusses exactly who is considered status quo, the Yerusha Ha'im, the Yerusha Ha'ben. The Gemara has an extensive discussion over there in Baba Basra. I'm not going to get involved in that right now. Here's all we need to know for right now, for our purposes of this Gemara. And we need to know that according to Rabbi Akiva, you have this very powerful idea of chazaka. Status quo, you leave things in perpetuity. If we don't know who the correct recipient is, don't move it from one person to another. Now let's go back to our discussion. Five people are claiming a stolen item from one person, and he doesn't know who the rightful owner is. So Rabbi Akiva says, okay, so just simply pay each one of them. What? How can you have Rabbi Akiva saying that he should pay each one of them? If we don't know who the rightful owner is, status quo. Leave everything as is. Don't touch anything. Don't move the property from one person to another if you don't know who the rightful owner is. No. Each one would be getting the full value of the item. It's okay. So, I'm Amrlei Hasam Shema V'Shema. So, Gezel Acha Mechamisha Bar V'Shema. So, the Gemara says, well, we'll start off with the following distinction. In the case of the house falling in, each claim is a possibility. When the Yerusha Ha'im say that first the child died, then the mother died, so they're not saying we know this to be so, we're saying that's a possibility. And when the other party says, no, first the mother died, then the child died, they're not saying they know what happened, they're just simply saying this as a possibility. So the Gemara says that's what's called Shema V'Shema. In the case of Shema V'Shema, of course Rabbi Akiva would say, leave things as is, neither party is making a claim that they know to be correct. Huh? I'm sorry, but over here it's Bari V'Shema. But over here, it's a definitive claim against the thief. Now, I'm going to admit, when we say it's a definitive claim, remember, of the five people, only one of them is telling the truth. At least, however, for that one person, even though we don't know who that one person is, at least for that one person, he's saying a claim that's definitive. only because we don't know which one of the five is telling the truth, so he's going to have to pay all five. But the Gemara says, but that's the difference between the case of the house and the case of the five possible victims. Gemara says, okay, however, the Mishnah and Yavamos, the Mishnah and Bava Basra, what about our Mishnah and Bava Metzia? Our Mishnah and Bava Metzia is talking about a case where the thief approaches one of two people. I'm sorry, he approaches both people and he says, I stole possibly from one of you two, I don't know which one. And ostensibly their response is, well, we don't know either, ostensibly. So now this is a case of Shema Vishema. The thief's position is, I don't know. The victim's position is, we don't know. And yet, what did our Mishnah teach us? That he's got to pay each one of them. Umimai de Rabbi Akiva, he, now our Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara says, yes, Diktani Allah, Dahi, Mod Rabbi Tarfon, Baum, Lashlaim, Gazal, Telech, Mikem, Manavi, Eina, Yodez, and Mikem, Vechule. So, Laman Moda, La Rabbi Akiva, Bar Plukte. So the Gemara says, yes, we know that based on the language that's used, that Rabbi Tarfon was in agreement with Rabbi Akiva, we know that our Mishnah also subscribes to the idea of Rabbi Akiva. So, So the Gemara says now, in our Mishnah, the Gemara is just now crossing the T's, dotting the I's. How do I know that our Mishnah's case is a case of Shema V'Shema? Chada de lo katani tovim oso. First of all, they are not tovei ahim, meaning the victims aren't demanding the money, so they're not saying anything. Va'od ha'tani Rabbi Chia, ze'omer ni yodiv, ze'omer ni yodea. And the Gemara says, and furthermore, we also happen to have a brisa of Rabbi Chia that taught us that their response to the Goslin is, we don't know. So the Goslin is saying, I don't know. The two victims are saying, we don't know. So it is simply a case of Shema V'Shema. So the Gemara now has finished formulating the question. So again, let's just reset the question. So that and the answer, quite frankly, is something we've already said before. But let's just reset the question. So here we have scenarios in which you are. Rabbi Akiva says that if it's a question of Shema V'Shema, where each claimant is not saying anything definitively, they're just simply saying it's possible, what's called a claim of Shema. So if it's Shema V'Shema, if the two claims that are going one against the other, Shema V'Shema, Rabbi Akiva generally says Chazaka. Status quo, don't move monies from one hand to another. We see that very clearly in the case of Baba Basra, where the house caved in, and both parties are saying this is what may have happened. Rabbi Akiva says, fine, chazaka, leave the money in perpetuity. And status quo, and don't move monies. So the question now is, well, and as far as the Mishnah Yavamos is concerned, the Gemara says, that's not Shema V'Shema, because the victim is saying definitively, I am the victim. So that's not a case of Shema V'Shema. But our Mishnah is certainly a case of Shema V'Shema, where a guy goes to one of two people and he says, I stole from one of you two, and we know that their responses are, well, we don't know. So this is a question of Shema V'Shema. The thief himself does not know who he stole from. The victims do not know whether or not they were victims or not. So it's a case of Shema V'Shema, and our Mishnah tells us he's got to pay both of them. So we have now formulated the question. How can Rabbi Akiva and our Mishnah say pay both of them? And the Gemara, let's do this well. And the Gemara also explained that our Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Akiva. Our Mishnah doesn't say that, but the Gemara established that. So now, how can our Mishnah say that the thief should be paying the victims when it's Shema V'Shema, just like the Mishnah Baba Basra, where there too is Shema V'Shema? So the Gemara says, "How kimna laha bavala says yidei shamayim?" Answer says the Gemara, it's very simple. Very simple. Generally speaking, if the claims are both possibilities and not definitive claims, status quo, chazaka. That's generally the rule. That's the Mishnah Baba Basra. In our Mishnah, it's exceptional because, we said this once before, we're saying this now for a second time, it's exceptional because the thief himself wants to do tshuva. Since he wants to do tshuva, under the general monetary law, he shouldn't be paying either one of them because he doesn't know and they don't know. But he wants to do tshuva, so therefore he's going to be paying both of the victims, even though only one of the two is a victim. Okay, and one more point before we wrap all this up. The Gemara says, now according to Rava, remember we made a distinction between the first case of the Mishnah and the second case of the Mishnah in terms of deposits. Where do we expect the Shomer to know who gave him what? when the deposits came in two different times. But if the two deposits came simultaneously, just like the depositors themselves don't seem to care, you know, don't seem to mind depositing the money with somebody else's money. So we can't expect the shomer to be any more careful. It's what we said yesterday. And therefore, we don't expect him to know who deposited the 100 and who deposited the 200. The Gemara says on this point, V'amar Rav v'itemar Rapapa komodim b'shtem sheifkidu etzel roeh shemeniach ronim b'neim u'mistalek. So the Gemara says, what about the case where two people are leaving their sheep by the shepherd? Okay, so, and as Rashi points out, one leaves one, the other leaves two, and they come back, and each one claims that they left two sheep by the shepherd. And over there, it would seemingly be, the Gemara is asking the question, assuming that they deposit at the same time, what's the difference? The Gemara over there says, yeah, but that case over there is talking about where they left it by the shepherd, and they didn't tell him that they left the sheep by the shepherd, so therefore, we cannot expect the shepherd to know who left him what. Okay, this is a question which was long coming. The Mishnah gave two scenarios which were identical. It's just that the first scenario dealt with money and the second scenario dealt with kelim. In the first scenario, one deposited 100, the other deposited 200, and both of the depositors are coming now and claiming 200. In the second scenario in the Mishnah, one deposits a kli that's worth 100, the other deposits a kli that's worth 1,000. Obviously a much wider discrepancy. And each one claims that they deposited the more expensive kli, and once again, he doesn't know. In both of those scenarios, there is a debate in the Mishnah exactly how to approach it. However, why does the Mishnah need to go over both of these scenarios? Utsricha, the Gemara says it's necessary. The Gemara says, because please let's consider that in the case of the money, so money is divisible. But when it comes to a kli, how are you going to divide a kli? Right? You are either going to sell it and divide its worth, or you're actually going to break the kli. In either event, there's going to be a loss, meaning that the one who had the larger kli is not going to be getting back his larger kli. So over there, I might have thought Rav Yossi is really taking the better position. Don't give anything back to anybody. And let, you know, and smoke out the Ramai, and by not giving anything back to anybody. And I might have thought that the Tana Kama would agree to Rav Yossi. And if we only had the case of the Kli, so I might have thought that Rav Yossi would only take his position of giving nothing back to anybody in the case of the Kli. But had the Mishnah not given me the case of the money, I might have thought that Rav Yossi would agree with the Chachamim of simply giving each 100 and then holding the third 100 in escrow until we could figure out what's happening. So the Gemara says, that is why I would need both. So the Gemara says, Modulula Rabbanan Sricha. Therefore, they're both necessary. Gemara now on the very top of Lamaches Amad Allah, Vaha, Taima de Rav Yossi Mishum, Hefzed HaRamayhu. The Gemara says, but wait one second, didn't we say that according to Rav Yossi, the only reason why he's not handing anything back to anybody is because we don't want the Ramai to benefit, we want him to lose out? So the Gemara says, and therefore, according to Rav Yossi, there really is no difference whatsoever between the case of the money and the case of the kli. In other words, we want to smoke out the Ramai, so if that's our goal, so then we never would think that Rav Yossi would agree to the Chachamim. So the Gemara says, Ela tavar l'rabbanan tzrich v'lo zu'avzu katani. So the Gemara concedes, you're right. Rav Yossi's position was never in question. The only thing is that the Chachamim want to give us a chiddush and then a second chiddush. It's a style of the Mishnah of lo zu'avzu. I'll tell you this, and I'll tell you even something bigger. In other words, so the two cases are not to teach us any chiddush in Rav Yossi. It's only to teach us a chiddush in the Chachamim. Okay, Ad Kan. Okay, we're in the Mishnah on Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. We are now beginning the next Mishnah of the third parak of Bava Metzia, and it's a very simple question that the Mishnah is going to be treating us to, and that is the following: somebody deposits something by you, but it's a perishable. And now you are waiting day by day for the owner to come back in order to retrieve his item, and it's taking a little bit longer than expected, and the perishables do what they do. Right? We're talking like food. So it's about the food's going to go bad. So what are you now, the Shomer, supposed to do? So your two options is A, nothing. In other words, he asked you to watch it. Okay, you're going to watch it. And even as the item now diminishes in value, okay, but your assignment was to watch it. So one option is nothing. Or the other option is, no, salvage what you can. Now sell the item to somebody, hold the money, and then when the owner comes back, give him the money, so at least you salvaged what you could in terms of its value. Those are your two options of what you could do. And what is the Mishnah going to teach us? Machlokas. So Amavki Perisetsu Chavera Afilo Hein Avudim Lo Yiga Behem. According to the Tanakama, don't touch the perishables. Let the perishables rot and spoil. And Rav Shimon Gamliel Amar Mochem Mifnei Beisdin Mid Meshu Kemeshiv Avedel Abalim. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no, sell them. Now sell them in front of Beisdin. It's easy to imagine that the sale in front of Beisdin is so that just to make sure that you did everything right and you didn't misappropriate whatsoever. And your Meshiv Avedel. This is like returning a lost item. If you don't do this, the item's value is going to end up becoming zero. And then what good is it when he comes back and you hand him back rotted fruit? Totally rotted fruit. So therefore, salvage what you can before the item goes bad. Okay. So the two opinions in the Mishnah. Now, if I were to ask you which one seems to be more intuitive, or I'll tell you this. If you want my opinion, which one's more intuitive, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's position seems to be a lot more intuitive. Right? The owner would much prefer, I mean, granted, by the way, there's a certain amount of irresponsibility on the part of the owner that he's leaving you with these perishables and he's leaving you with this decision of what to do now with the items that are going to lose its total value. Granted. But now that we're here, obviously, it would be better for the owner of these fruit if he got some value back for it as opposed to getting back totally rotted fruit. So if you ask me, I'd say that Rav Shimon Gamliel's position seems to be a little bit more intuitive. The Tana Kama says don't touch it and let it rot. What's the basis of that position?
This case of Gamliel's position would be Talbot Homer. I mean, if you are not a Shomer and you have a Veda, you have to return it.
Right, that's right.
Now, this one you're also...
Correct. That's the language that he uses is very good. It's Meshiv Aveda. You're returning a lost item. I agree. In other words, I think the more, again, it's just my thought, but I think the more intuitive position is Rav Shimon Gamliel, which is basically what I'm doing is I'm previewing the Gemara because the Gemara is going to spend all of its time trying to focus on what is behind the opinion of the Tana Kama. Why would the Tana Kama say don't touch it? So my Taima. So the Gemara's question of my Taima, and as will become clear, the question of the Gemara is trying to understand the opinion of the Tana Kama. Why would he say let the food rot? So the Gemara is going to give two possible explanations. Amar Rav Kahana Adam Rotsa Bekav Shalom Mitisha Kav Mishal Chaveira. So the first explanation, slightly psychological, right, sentimental. I like my own produce. I would rather have one kav of my own produce than nine of my friend's produce. Rashi explains. I'm reading Rashi. Kav Shalo Chaviva Alav Ayadei She'amal Behem. When you work for something, you end up having an attachment to that item that you work for. You love the item. V'kav she'yishar lo mehem, who wrote to mitisha kavim shalacherim, she'yikach b'demeim imyim karein. And even though what I'm going to only end up with, when I fetch now my rotted fruit, I may salvage one kav, I'd rather have one kav of my own fruit that I worked for, that I sweated for, that I have an attachment to, rather than nine kav of somebody else's produce. Meaning nine, meaning, as Rashi explains, had the Shomer have sold it, so he would have had, instead of one kav, he would have had nine kavim. Now, I'm not that sentimental a person, to be totally honest. And I think I'd rather have nine kavim of somebody else's produce rather than the one that I worked hard for. But the Gemara says, that Rav Kahana says, that's exactly what's behind the Tana Kama. People do attach themselves to the things that they worked hard for. And if you worked hard for the fruit, you'd rather have just even a small amount of your own rather than somebody else's. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar Chayshin and Shemas and Namavki Truma Maisa Makom Acher. The second explanation of the Gemara is that no, it's not a question of attachment. It's a halachic consideration. And that is the following. The owner of the produce, what may ended up happening is that he is going to separate Trumas and Maestros on the produce that is by the Shomer. So to explain this a little bit better. We know that in order to eat produce in Eretz Yisrael, so you, the farmer, you, the owner of the produce, so you have to first take off Trumas HaMaisros. Before taking off Trumas HaMaisros, the produce is what's called Tevel. It is usher to eat Tevel. The Chiyuv Nisa B'dei Shemayim if you eat Tevel. So the so an owner of produce in Eretz Yisrael, harvesting in Eretz Yisrael, can't eat until he takes off Trumas HaMaisros. Now, taking off Trumas HaMaisros is very simple. In other words, just simply portion off 2% to the Kohen, 10% to the Levi, another 10% depending on the year to either as Maiser Sheni or as Maiser Ani. And then after taking off the 2, 10, 10, the remaining portion now is Mutter. It's all now what's called Mesukan. It's corrected, it's fixed. And you can eat the residual approximately 80% of that which is left over. Okay, so approximately 20% is going off to Kohanim and Levim and Maiser Sheni or Maiser Ani, and then the residual approximately 80% stays by you. Good. Now, as a general rule, in order for you to take off Trumas HaMaisros, so everything needs to be in one bundle and you just simply portion it off. However, what you could do is that the produce don't have to be all together. I can have some produce over here, I can have a produce in another location, and I could just simply say that my produce I have in another location should serve as Trumas HaMaisros on the produce that I have here. And the Gemara says this is another reason why the Shomer who was asked to watch produce shouldn't touch the produce, because the owner, what the owner may have done is designated the produce being held by the Shomer as Trumos and Maestros on the produce that he has in his own home. If that's true, now what if then the Shomer were to be selling that produce? Do you know what he's selling? He's selling now Trumos and Maestros. So first of all, first things first, it's not his to sell. Trumos and Maestros go to the Kohen, go to the Levi. The second issue is that the buyer of the Truma is now a non-Kohen eating Truma. Zar she'achal truma, a non-kohen eating trumas, misa b'dei shamayim. So that's why a second explanation given to the Tanakhama that the Shomer is not allowed to sell the produce for fear, for concern that the owner of the produce designated this particular produce as trumas amaisos for the produce that he has in his house. Now, just one more point to make, and then we're going to go on in the Gemara. Generally speaking, there is a prohibition of designate Trumas HaMaisros Shalom Min HaMukaf, which means that in order for you to rightfully separate Trumas HaMaisros, everything has to be proximate to one another, and then what you do is you move it off to the side and designate Trumas HaMaisros. In other words, everything has to be bundled together in order to separate Trumas HaMaisros. For you to be separating Trumas HaMaisros on some produce over here and some produce that is far away, that is what's called Torim Shalom Min HaMukaf. And generally speaking, it is prohibited. Now, the level of prohibition, is it a Torah prohibition? Is it a rabbinic prohibition? It, for our purposes right now, I just want to make this one quick point. It's usher to do. One should not do that. And so therefore, Tosos, the first Tosos on the Amud, asked the question, why should we be concerned about the Shomer's produce becoming designated as Trumas HaMaisros? It's Shalom Min HaMukaf. It is not proximate to the other pile. And generally speaking, we don't assume people would do that. Tosfos raises that issue. Rabbi Natan gives an approach. See the top Tosfos for that discussion. I just want to alert everyone to this being a consideration. Okay, so let's quickly recap. We have a Mishnah. The Mishnah says that if you have perishables, you're a Shomer, you're watching the perishables, and you see them perishing, what do you do? Tanakhama says nothing. Rav Shimon Gamliel says sell it. And then when the owner comes back, give him the money, give him the proceeds of the sale. What's the reason behind the Tanakhama? Two reasons offered in the Gemara, one by Rav Kahana, the other by Rav Nachman Yitzchak. Rav Kahana says, because the owner has an attachment for the produce that he worked for, and despite the fact that it's rotting, he still would have his rotted own produce rather than somebody else's produce. The second explanation of Rav Nachman Yitzchak is because we're concerned that maybe Trumas and Maisos were taken off by the owner, and this, the produce held by the Shomer, is the resulting Trumas HaMaisros of the owner's produce. Gemara makes fair, the Gemara challenges. Hamav kipir says a chaver zelo yiga behem lefichach balabaisos some Trumas HaMaisros amakam acher. The Braisa says very clearly Lefichach, why would that be that you should leave the perishables alone for fear that maybe Trumos and Maisos were separated? This Brisa clearly is going with Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Now Bishlam al Rav Bishlam al Rav Kahana, all the way around. Sorry, let me do that again. This Brisa is a proof for Rav Kahana. Why? Hanei Deitan Lefichach. That is why the Brisa says the word Lefichach as a result of. But Ella Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, my Lefichach Hachikamer Hashadam Rabbanon Lo Nizbin Dechesinan Lefichach Balabaisos Son Shumas Maisos Amakum Achir. According to Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, the way to correctly understand the Brisa is that because the Chachamim told you the Shomer not to sell it, therefore what the owner is allowed to do is designate this as Trumas HaMaisos. Amar Rabba Barachan, Amar Rav Yochanan. Okay, so we have a Mishnah. You're watching perishables. What are you supposed to do? Tanakama says, let it rot. Two reasons given for the Tanakama. And now the Gemara is going to make one other point. Amar Rabba Barachan, Amar Rav Yochanan, Machlokas Bichdei Chesronan. Now we're talking about rate of rotting. The Gemara says that if the fruit are rotting at a normal rate, we will discuss the actual rate in a couple days from now in Daf Mem. The Gemara is going to have that discussion. But right now, let's just talk about normal rate and accelerated rate of rotting. If it rots at a normal rate, machlokes bichtei chesronan. Aval yosem bichtei chesronan divrei kol mochran bebeisdin. So Rav Yochanan says that if the rate of rotting is accelerated and it is rotting faster than normal, so then everyone's in agreement, both the Tanakama and Rav Shimon Gamliel of our Mishnah are both then going to agree it's the Shomer's responsibility to sell and salvage its value. The Gemara says, Adar, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Vadei Pligi. Now the Gemara says, now Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak wouldn't agree to this, because if the concern is the produce becoming Trumas HaMaisros, so the rate doesn't matter. If the produce held by the Shomer is Trumas HaMaisros, you cannot sell it, period, under any circumstance. So, Ad Rav Kahana Milema Pligi. So the Gemara says, but how do we know that if he argues with Rav Kahana, perhaps Rav Yochanan does not argue with Rav Kahana? Remember, Rav Kahana talked about sentimental attachment that you have to things that you worked for. Maybe Rav Kahana would agree to Rav Yochanan. So, Ki Kamar Rav Yochanan Bechtei Chesronan Kamar. So the Gemara says, well, maybe not, because maybe Rav Kahana would agree to Rav Yochanan that if it rots at a normal rate, maybe he would say, then, yeah, I concede. I would concede the point that if it is rotting at an accelerated rate, even though people have a sentimental attachment, but the rate of rotting is right now too much, and you know what? Let's salvage it. So the Gemara says, yeah, but did you remember Rav Kahana's numbers? A person would rather have one of his own kav rather than recovering nine kavim. Now, that is a tremendous rate of rotting. You're talking about salvaging just one for nine? You'd rather have one of your own rather than nine? Now, we haven't learned the rates yet, but this obviously far exceeds any you know, in the Mishnah Daf Mem, we're going to be talking about fractions. In other words, it is a fraction of its original. Over here, you're talking about it having a residual value nine times greater than what it originally was. So the Gemara is saying, if those are the numbers used by Rav Kahana, obviously it would seem like his position is, I don't care to what degree it's going to rot. The owner still wants whatever's left over of his own. So the Gemara says, Guzma ba'ama. So the Gemara says, well, maybe not. Maybe even though Rav Kahana used those numbers, maybe those numbers were just simply hyperbole. He just simply meant that, generally speaking, people want their own rather than somebody else's. But maybe Rav Kahana would concede to Rav Yochanan that if the rate of rotting is significantly greater than normal, so then maybe he would also agree that the expectation is that the Shomer should sell it. Meisve. The Gemara now is going to quote the Braisa again. Meisve lefichach balabaisa sarosan chuma maisa amakom achir velechus dilma havaluhu yosemichtei chesronan vizavnina vaka'achal tvalim. So the Gemara says, now let's think this through. In other words, remember the Braisa said, don't sell it because the owner is not allowed to sell it, and let me say that again better. The shomer is not allowed to sell it, and therefore the owner can use this produce as trumas amaisos on any produce that he has in his house. Now the Gemara says, now, if there would be a scenario in which you're allowed to sell it, which according to Rav Yochanan there is, according to Rav Yochanan, if it is diminishing at a greater rate than normal, you're allowed to sell it. So that means now that the owner who expected his produce to still be in the possession of the shomer, it's not going to be there. And that now means that what the owner is going to be doing is think that his produce is mesukan, and meanwhile it's not. So the Gemara says, well, to be honest with you, this example would be highly unusual. So the Gemara says, okay, I understand it's highly unusual, but if it were to happen, now, wouldn't the shomer be selling produce that is trumas amaisos? So the Gemara says, "Ki mizbenin nami lekohanim b'dmei truma mizavnin lehu." So the Gemara says, even when the shomer is selling it, now what we're going to do is we're going to modify our position. He's not selling it to just anybody. He's selling the produce to kohanim as truma. Now, just as a general note, we've discussed this already a number of times. When you're selling truma to a kohen, you're not going to be fetching fair value for that which you're selling, because remember, a kohen can get truma for free. If you can get something for free, how much are you going to pay for something that you could in theory get for free? And the answer is, of course, that obviously it creates a very low market demand for truma. When you sell it to the kohen, you're going to be selling it at a very cheap rate, which makes this all very unusual then, because now the whole purpose of the shomer selling is to recover, and meanwhile what he's going to be recovering is not a lot of money for that which he actually is selling. Okay. Ula Rav Nachman Yitzchak Nami Nezvanin Lekohanim B'Demei Truma. So the Gemara says, now according to Rav Nachman Yitzchak, so I don't understand. So according to Rav Yochanan, where do we stand right now? The shomer is going to be selling the produce, but only going to be selling it to a kohen. So the Gemara says, okay, let's back all the way up to the opinion of Rav Nachman Yitzchak. Why don't we say the same thing? Why not have the shomer sell it to a kohen? So the Gemara says, Baha Pligi. The Gemara says, okay, now we're going to explain the debate. Rabbi Baruch Hanna Savi Yosef Mechtech Hashon Alashchiach Midi. So Rabbi Baruch Hanna's starting point is, all this is highly unusual. The idea that the produce is going to be diminishing greater than the normal rate is in of itself unusual. And if it were to happen, it takes time for this to happen. And if the owner is going to be designating trumas and maisos, it's going to be before the fruit actually rot. And therefore, according to Rav Yochanan, since to begin with, all this is going to be highly unusual, and if the fruit are going to rot, it's going to take time. And the assumption is that the owner is going to be separating trumas and maisos before the fruit actually rot. So therefore, according to Rav Yochanan, if the shomer feels like he needs to sell it, so he'll sell it to a kohen. Rav Nachman Yitzchak starts off with a different assumption. He says that fruit rotting greater than its normal rate is not unusual. It happens more often than you think. And generally speaking, if it were to happen, it would happen actually pretty quickly. And therefore, if the shomer were to sell the fruit, he may end up selling it before the owner designated his trumas and maisos. And now, when the owner separates trumas and maisos, unbeknownst to him, the trumas and maisos, the produce is no longer in the hands of the shomer. And therefore, the owner is going to be separating trumas and maisos, but it wasn't affected because it was already sold. It was in somebody else's possession. And now the owner is going to end up thinking that his payers are corrected, and meanwhile, they're not. Okay. Meisvei. Let's finish up today with the following. The Bryce over here, again, illustrates the example where you are given perishables to watch, and you're watching them perish. The wine is the, let's go over each one of them. The wine is becoming vinegar. The oil is getting putrid. The honey is getting sour. So in all these cases, Rameir says, okay, but don't touch it. Let it go. The Chacham Emor Mimosa Lahem Takana Mochem Beveistin Ukshu Mochem Mochem Lachem Vena Mochem Latzman. So according to the Chachamim, much like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel in our Mishnah, salvage it, sell it, and let the owner at least get its value before it becomes totally sour. Kayotze, but by the way, says the Chachamim, don't sell it to yourself. That's improper. Sell it to somebody else. In other words, prior to it rotting. Kayotze bogabay tzaka bezman shein lahamaniyim lechalek portan lachirmin portan latzman. Similarly, an ani has what to? I'm sorry. The gabay has money to give out to the aniyim. Right now, he currently can't find aniyim. So what should you do? So you should exchange. Now the money. I know it's strange, but money also rots and devalues over the course of time. So meaning the assumption in this Mishnah is that certain metals will rot at a higher rate. So what we want the Gabbai now to do is basically convert the inferior money into better money so that you can, so at least you can salvage it. And again, don't convert it with your own money, you the Gabbai, convert it with other people's money. So Gabi, I'm sorry, Gabi Tamchui Bizman Shein Lamaniyam Lechalek Mochum Lachem and Mochum Latzman, the person in charge of the soup kitchen. So let's say he's running a soup kitchen, you have food to give out, and nobody comes. So what do you do? In other words, if you just don't do anything, all the food's going to go bad. Sell the food. Again, don't sell it to yourself, sell it to others, and that way you'll have the money, and that way you can run your soup kitchen again next week using the money. So the Gemara says, Ketani mios perevi kivu, my love afilu yesmite chesronan. So the Gemara says, so now, one of the things mentioned in the Brisa is fruit that went bad. So the Gemara says, aren't we assuming that it diminished more than the normal rate? Lo bichtei chesronan. So the Gemara says, no, that's not true. It diminished at a usual rate. The Gemara says, wait 1 second. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. We are giving examples of wine that goes sour. I'm sorry, wine that turns into vinegar, honey that goes sour, oil that's also going bad. So aren't we talking about cases where they are diminishing beyond the normal rate? So the Gemara says, Shani honey, kevin de kam. So the Gemara says, no. These are examples of things that do diminish in value, but they have a floor. Meaning, basically, if you can imagine, like some sort of graph that tracks the diminishment of value. So what happens is that the cliff doesn't just continuously go down, but rather it hits a floor. Meaning, once wine turns into vinegar, so that's it. Meaning, it's not going to become more putrid, more bad. In other words, it just simply it levels off at vinegar, and that's it. And the same thing is true with honey, and the same thing is true with oil. Once they go bad, it doesn't just simply go down to zero. It eventually floors out. And the Gemara then just simply, and we'll just finish up with this, Shemen vehivish, dvash vehidvish. So now let's talk about the oil that went bad, and let's talk about the honey that went bad. So the Gemara's question is, we're now on the very top of Laman Chesem Advice, Lamai Chazeh. So the Gemara says, now, exactly, what are they good for? So shemen chazel legaldai. So as far as the oil that went bad, it's still good for rubbing. And you'll take your hides and you'll rub the honey into the hides and, sorry, you'll rub the bad oil into the hides and that would be fine. And as far as dvash lekatisha degamle, and as far as the honey is concerned, the bad honey, so that's fine. In other words, you could use it as some sort of ointment for the camels. So in other words, they have a lot of burdens. The burdens create some sort of abrasion, some sort of lesion on the animal. So you simply rub the honey over there. Even the honey is not edible, but it still has some sort of basic value to it. So in other words, the Bryce's examples are things that do drop off, but at least have a floor. So under those circumstances, there's no point in selling them because they go bad, but they're not going to go down to zero. Masha Einkein, if you have something that goes bad to the point where it drops down to zero, so then there comes a point where you do have to sell them.